Welcome to another episode of the Mitts and Twigs podcast. I am always am your man, Mitt. With me, the incomparable Twigs. We are one game into the finals of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I was glued to the TV last night, Twigs. I couldn't believe the game. Really, it was so back and forth. It really felt like two unstoppable forces just trying to make headway against another. Man, it was electric. How are you?
Well, I'm fantastic. I'm great. We're almost to the end of hockey, and as a diehard fan of a team that's been out for a while, I start to see a little bit more headlines for those teams that have been eliminated. But I'm with you. The game was great, and like you said, these are two really, really hot teams. Like, it wasn't like they both went seven games, battled tooth and nail. No, the Florida Panthers have been done for, like, waiting for Vegas for quite a while now. Toronto wasn't a problem. Carolina wasn't a problem. Vegas is starting to look like a problem. But no, it was fun. I only got to catch half of it. I was busy working. The half that I did watch, yeah, it's incredible. Incredible hockey. Might be the worst jersey matchup I've seen in the playoffs so far. Like, it is. No. I'm sorry. Those Golden Knight jerseys, awful. They are awful. And the Florida Panthers ones, yeah, I'm not a big fan too. And also, NHL, I get that the jerseys are now have like a sponsor. What am I thinking? Advertising on them. We got to figure out the patch situation because that's an eyesore. Makes no sense. Yeah. But how are you?
Nope. I'm doing pretty well. It's been, I guess, like 2 weeks since our last ep, I think, because we wanted to... We wanted to catch the start of the playoffs, but start of the finals, busy weeks didn't really allow for it. So here we are now, but it was good times. I was over watching the game with some friends, and I'm going to push back on that because, you know, the Golden Knights jerseys, especially those home jerseys, haven't always been my fave. But I don't think I've caught a lot of like actual like in-game moments, close-ups, to realize how sparkly those golden jerseys are. Oh. And that sold me. The moment I noticed that they were that, I was like, oh, okay, good. Because I thought it was just like a lazy mustard. No, that is one golden knight. And I love it.
It's a Taylor Swift dress. That's what it is.
I would say it looks more like an Eras Tour. OVO. Looks like Drake helped them set that up.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a fan. They're definitely Vegas, right? Like, they're a little bit over the top. Yeah. The glitter's a lot. They got different helmets too, right? Like, it's not on these ones, but they've had the gold buckets, right? Yeah. Just it's a little too much for old Ty here.
I can't, and I don't know. I can't see the problem with the Florida's away jerseys. They're gorgeous.
I don't know. I do love the, I guess, it basically the Stanley Cup is Stanley Cup West Point, hey? Both owners are from West Point. The Army, very Army focused. They got the alternate on the arm. I think that's a great touch. If you've ever seen them, I love it. But, yeah, I don't know. We could have better. Carolinas are nicer than Florida's by a mile, the retro ones. But, hey.
Yeah. The Canes don't miss often, except, you know, conference finals. But the sponsorship, the advertising on the jerseys, I mean, anybody that's been online on Twitter or anywhere else can see. The only person that thought that was a good idea was probably Gary Bettman. Everybody else, they did a horrible job placing things, jamming things together like that. In a lot of ways, disrespecting, say, the C on the jersey by cramming in a little special patch in there just so that they give extra room to their paid sponsors, which are getting to be a little much. You know, you got one on the helmet, that's fine. You know, there could probably be a little patch on there, so be it. But I think especially when we get to the playoffs, I guess there's probably also the most eyes on it at that time, but that's when it's like, okay, this is important now, let's stop this. But the biggest question that came up, we were watching it to, uh, couple of couples, I guess you'd say. And one of the less hockey interested partners said, "Why is there a Canadian Tire symbol on that? Isn't that they in Vegas?" And they're like, "Yep, fun fact. That's just a terrible decision to squeeze a couple more dollars out of things at the expense of our enjoyment of the game." So, but yeah, outside of the NHL's best efforts, the game itself was fantastic. Oh my goodness. Back and forth, just tooth and nail. Aiden Hill with just the most phenomenal save, which totally makes up for him basically causing the early stall goalie with his, which is a bad move there. But I mean, that was great. It was great to see he stayed in it. He stayed engaged. He bounced back like that. And then, man, the boys just started figuring out Bobrovsky like I don't think we've seen since the first round.
This was my fear for Florida was I think it was over a span of 10 days that they had off. I think it was more than that. Man, that can't be good for Bobrovsky, who finally got his game in order. He was back to the guy. Remember, he didn't start this Stanley Cup playoffs. He did not start. It was Lyon who had the starting role, lost a little bit, and then Bob came in to play some crucial games, and he was incredible. He was fantastic in Toronto. He's fantastic in Carolina. But all that time off, you hope that you don't lose your mojo. And boy, did Vegas find those holes. And I don't want to say it was all on him. The Matthew Tkachuk clearing, you know, the new thing that they do in their zone, they flip it. That Mark Stone hand-eye, batted down on the ice, quick release, incredible goal. Like, it was, I couldn't believe it wasn't a high stick. But again, I didn't want to take it off the board because it was such a nice goal as well. You better hope Bobrovsky finds his game for part two, which should be heated because, boy, was Bennett and Tkachuk going after Petro and going after Haig and just wanted to get anybody to react so they can take him in the box with them. Game two might be a little bit nasty. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. What I will say is I'll commend the guys on the Knights and especially Petro showing a lot more composure than I think a lot of people have seen in him in some other playoff moments this year. We're watching the replays and you can see like Tkachuk's throwing cheap shots, like actual like punches to the face in scrums, very obvious. They're headlocking guys, they're face washing guys, grabbing them by the neck from behind, and the Knights are just laughing it off. And actually, they're laughing it off sometimes. The rest of the time, they're just stone faced. They're absolutely stone faced. Even early on, when I think it was Bennett gave a shove to Hill in that started a scrum, Hill threw a couple of punches that probably should have been called for something. But you saw that even after that, they hauled them off away from Hill. Like Eichel, I think, pulled somebody down to the ice. But that was it. They like the Golden Knights right in this last night. They played with so much composure, without taking a back seat, without like being soft, right? Like they were in there for the scrums, but they weren't escalating anything. They were just breaking it up, getting it out of there, making sure that the Knights or the Cats knew that they were there and that they weren't going to take it. But yeah, it was interesting, especially at the end of the game. You could really see Tkachuk getting into his bag, trying to get something going.
Yeah,
which they were biting. So it'll be interesting. I could definitely see them maybe starting the next game like that, seeing if they can get them off their point early. But man, I don't know. I'm excited. It should be a fantastic series. They both, as I said, they both looked really great at different times. And man, two great coaches that are going to have their guys ready for the game tomorrow night.
Yeah, I was not a Paul Maurice fan. I didn't love the. I thought it was pretty. It was a badass move to be able to just go call a press conference and quit on Winnipeg, right? Like that's what it was. It was like, I know this team is headed for some rocky and some turbulence coming, right? So I'm gonna quit mid season and just say they're not listening to me anymore. He's never really won anything, so I wasn't the biggest, but I am enjoying him this run. Even the one last night where he's talking to everybody, he goes, everybody just take an effing breath, right? Like, we're fine. I'm like, I love it. Like, yeah. He is composed. He's got Tkachuk playing at a high level. He's got any goalie that he throws in there playing at a high level. He's got the Staal brothers playing in the middle of June, which you wouldn't think they would, right? Pride Month joke. But yeah, I'm loving it. And then you got Cassidy, who was basically Boston said, we don't want you. And he is coaching up a storm in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see that he's having this success. I gotta think that whether it's already happened or it happens afterwards, there's got to be a cheeky moment where he says, gives a thanks to Paul Maurice for taking care of Boston, because that had to, you know, I don't care who you are. I'm not suggesting it's affecting him his day at all, but there has to be some moment where he saw that and he thought, good.
Oh,
good for you. You know,
100%.
Yeah. So that was great. But Paul Maurice, really enjoying. I was reading a little bit about, because I didn't catch any press conference, but in Sportsnet, Ian McIntyre has an article up right now, kind of going through it and kind of joking about how Paul Maurice was like almost oversharing at certain points in the press conference. But like his attitude towards it all just seems really insightful of himself. Like he's self-aware. And he's kind of grown from the coach that he maybe was when he started his career. And he references it. He said, you know, when I started 30 years ago, you just like grumbled at guys and like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, but this is a whole, like, this is a new age of hockey, new type of player. And it was really interesting to hear him just talk about it and be like, that's why I'm not like upset. Like, Matthew had that turnover there last night, but I'm not saying anything to him. Like, he doesn't need me to do that. And he really kind of, I thought it was like, this is what we need to hear more of. This one needs to be highlighted more of someone who's been coaching for, you know, through these eras, so to speak, and can find success now because he's adapted and he's taken a moment to get to know the players and understand how the culture has changed for them. So I thought that was really great to see. Regardless of who wins, I think this is a hugely successful year for two coaches that, for different reasons, were facing a lot of questions and you know, naysayers, and they just knocked it out of the park. Both.
I think it's successful for the NHL in general. You're going to have neither of these teams have ever won a Stanley Cup before, right? You have a fairly new franchise, and you can't hate on Vegas for, you know, they have not been given everything. I have said that in the past. George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon have built an incredible team. They have gone big fish. They go big fish hunting, or not big fish hunting. They go big game hunting every single time. They go get the guy they want. And why wouldn't they? Brad Treliving wouldn't trade Juuso Välimäki for Mark Stone. So Vegas did, right? They went and got him. They went and got Petrangelo. They paid him the price that St. Louis wouldn't. Even after winning a cup, they have tried how many different goalies? Now, have we badmouthed Vegas? Yes, we've badmouthed Vegas. Yeah. They are cutthroat. When they don't see value, they will get rid of you. Just like that, and won't think anything of it. But at the end of the day, they have built a contending team. A strong team. And I think a team that's not being talked about as much as the Florida Panthers. Matthew Tkachuk is doing interviews on People's Magazine. He's on TNT right at the Heat game. Vegas is just kind of flying there. I know Dom on Twitter tweeted out a thing saying that it's two underdog teams. Vegas is not an underdog team. They were first in the league. Right? Like, that's not an underdog team.
In the
West. I'm breaking it down.
That's right.
But still, Boston was, you know, they were the ones, you know, the one that fired Bruce Cassidy.
Feels like a year ago that Boston was good and successful.
Yeah. But yeah, I I don't know. I think this is great for the NHL. I think it's fantastic. I've read a lot of articles saying how this isn't good because it's too like smaller South markets. No, this is what we want. You want teams that haven't won it before, to win it all, right?
Mm-hmm. That's how we're gonna have this year. I think whenever you see that the small markets, because the NBA deals with that as well, and the NBA after game one, the headline was that ratings took a drop, and it was like, yeah, Lakers versus Boston would have been a bigger ratings matchup, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I just watched game two before this from start to finish, and that was a hell of a basketball game. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you grow the game. You don't grow the game by just marching out the same champions every single year. You need these other teams to have success to build that fan base. So while short term, like, yeah, maybe revenue dollars may be down a smidge this year because the ratings aren't going to be what they would be if they'd been, you know, Toronto versus Edmonton or something like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, This is how you build that. This is how you build an environment where more people grow up loving hockey and ingrained with hockey,
yeah,
who then pass on the game, take it with them. So I think this is long term, this is a win. It's a big win. Mm-hmm. And especially when you think about if Vegas can make this work, if Vegas wins this year, well, this is a team that turned it around. Like, well, I shouldn't say, that's not the right phrase. They started
down
from,
year.
They started from nothing. From literally nothing. They've been competitive every single year except for one, so we're like 6 or 7 years into their lifetime now, and I think it's great for the NHL, but it puts a lot of, you know, I think in a lot of ways it kind of puts, say, let's say, management and ownership on the hot seat, because it's like, these guys started from nothing, and inside of under 10 years they won a Stanley Cup,
been to two finals,
conference finals. They've only missed the playoffs once. Like, what are the excuses for all these other teams that are perennial losers or perennial runners up? Great regular season, bad. You know, it's that type of thing where it defies, I think, a lot of regular hockey logic. But
yep.
Again, that's kind of, I think, how you grow the game, is you see a different side of things. You show this to different markets. You know, bring a title to a place that doesn't have any sports franchise titles ever from anywhere. If they win it, they'll be the first major sports team to bring a championship to Las Vegas. Now, please don't fact check me, because there may have been some kind of, I don't know, affiliate baseball team in the 17th century that pulled off a real humdinger of a title win. But at least in modern times, hockey was the first sport to really dive in fully into Vegas, which had been a black hole for forever, and to bring the title home, that'll be huge. That'll be huge.
They sell out almost every game. They have since Calgary 1989. They have more playoff wins than Calgary does since 1989. Playoff series wins.
That's amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It is incredible, right? And to go on the Florida side, you look at what Tampa has done in Florida. They sell out all the time. It's not like they are a slouch, and nobody wants to watch them. Everybody wants to watch Tampa. And you know how they did that? The same way Florida is doing it right now. You win, right?
Yeah.
That is a team that has not been able to sell out ever, really. Even in the second round, they had tickets available before games. This is how you grow. Nobody wants to go and watch a team that isn't successful. And in Florida, where it's beautiful out and hockey isn't prominent, this is what they have to do. And they're doing it. And Matthew Tkachuk was just on TNT. I just brought it up. That's huge. Do you see Connor McDavid on TNT? No. Do you see Austin Matthews on TNT? No. Do you see Austin Matthews getting a People's Magazine interview? No. Florida's growing the game. It might not be the big market we all think it is, but they are getting exposure that Brad Marchand would not be getting if he was in the finals. This is great for the game, and I'm all for it. And I need Vegas to win for my mental health.
Let's talk about this. We don't spend a lot of time on it. Right. The series has already started. I threw it in a group chat before game one. I had Vegas in six games. Anybody that's listening has heard our playoff predictions have not been stellar.
No, not good.
I think we probably lost to a coin toss bet most of the time. But Vegas and six, I feel really good about that after last night's game. Where do you, I mean, you just said you need Vegas for your mental health. But I get like, where do you see this series going?
So I think, and this is bad, like this is before my prediction. The winner of game one usually wins 79% of the time. I might be a terrible gambling man, but those are odds that I don't want to bet against. And I'm not. I'm going to say, I think you're spot on the money, right? Like right there, I'm going Vegas in six as well. I think Florida's going to win a couple. I definitely do. I don't know why I keep sleeping on Vegas. When I watch them, they are extremely well coached. Aiden Hill is playing incredible. They have superstars that don't get talked to. Like Jonathan Marchessault is really, really good at hockey. Alex Pietrangelo, really good. Shea Theodore, who I don't know, like, and I don't know why he doesn't get more airtime on about like just explaining how good he is. I don't know if it's because it's he is so smart. And he doesn't make mistakes. And Anaheim gave him away for nothing in the expansion draft. He's incredible. Zach Whitecloud is really good. Mark Stone, incredible two-way player. He is incredible.
Yeah.
Now I've just named all these players. I haven't even gotten into Jack Eichel. Like that's Jack Eichel is going to win a cup before Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews. We have shit on Jack Eichel for years. For years. And he's out here just riding on Mark Stone's coattails. You know what I mean? Like,
Eichel is having a very quiet but very good playoffs.
It's good. It's very good.
Yeah.
I don't know. How can you bet against, like, I get it. Like, right now the flashy name is Matthew Tkachuk, Sergei Bobrovsky, Sam Bennett's been great. Alexander Barkov, it's been okay. But, boy, I'm not betting against Vegas.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I feel good that I had my prediction, at least some, you know, fans out there, you know, you can question all you want, doesn't matter, that I thought Vegas and six, but especially after last night, like the first two periods were just so tight, so back and forth and just so even. Duclair's like basically that like goal? Buzzer beating goal that like I left. Didn't even see it. I'd watch the replay like five times before I finally saw it. That was phenomenal. That was so good. So smart. Like that's, you know, just to try to set that up, which they did. That was an intentional play. That wasn't just a whoops, they got lucky. That was what they were trying to do and they did it, which is wow. And then things started to break for Vegas. They poured it on. And like you said, that if that Mark Stone goal gets called a high stick, which you know, I think is probably 50-50 out there whether or not it was. At least in terms of opinion. It was still like the play itself. That was one where I was relatively happy. Obviously, if I was a Florida fan, I'd feel differently, but that was such an amazing play. Right?
So
like the,
good.
The hand-eye coordination to bring it down, but also he didn't even, he just like watched it land. His eyes go immediately to the net and he rips it.
Yeah.
Like his hand-eye coordination for the shot is arguably better than the hand-eye coordination he had to pick it out of the air. Because there was no stick handling. There was no cradling. It just, he knocked it down and he ripped it up. And it was
incredible.
Oh my God, it was so good. It was so good. And that would be, it would have been a damn shame if it had been called back, because that's going to be an iconic moment that they can put everywhere on TV. They can blast it around. Everyone can show it. And non-hockey fans and hockey fans alike will see that and go, holy crap. How does somebody even do that? How is that humanly possible?
Yeah, well, and especially like nowadays, that's the whole move, right? Is, hey, we're going to clear this puck by just lobbing it up and hopefully it won't cause, like, get to an icing. Mark Stone was like, nope, boom, knocked down in the net like that. It was so fast. And I know you said the Paul Maurice thing about Matthew Tkachuk. I don't know what Matthew's supposed to do differently there. That's what they've been doing all playoffs, right? Yeah. I guess you can go off the boards, but again, the chances of what Mark Stone did are slim, and it was incredible. Yeah. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
If I had popcorn, I would have thrown it.
So we both see Vegas taking the series, but the Panthers are going to be very game opponents. Mm-hmm. Great game one. Man, I think that pretty much wraps up the series. Do you have anything before we kind of just
move on? I think you summed it up beautifully.
Yeah. Well, then let's move on and congratulate the Quebec Remparts on winning the Memorial Cup. For those that don't know, the Memorial Cup is the championship of all three junior leagues, major junior leagues in Canada, with a host city from one of the teams. So you get three champions of host city. They took down, was it the Seattle Thunderbirds, the Peterborough Petes, and Kamloops Rocket, if I'm not mistaken.
Blazers.
Blazers. Sorry, Kamloops. Man, they look so good. This is the seventh Memorial Cup in 11 years that the Q League has taken home. So shout out, respect to my Eastern, I was going to say Eastern Conference, East Coast brethren. So proud. That's fantastic. It's so funny how much I saw that online, and there was even people on Reddit saying, like, isn't it weird that the Quebec League is like the worst league at producing NHL talent, but it keeps winning this? And it's like, man, like, even when they were like, people were even taking shots at them and like calling them out in a really strange way because they can't.
It's a backhanded compliment, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's Nathan McKinnon's okay, right? He's from there. Sidney Crosby, I don't know if you've heard of him. He came from.
He's pretty good.
He's not pretty bad. Good. I'd let him hold my stick. Oh, that came out wrong.
Well, you would.
Yeah. Well. That's
hockey stick. Hey. Yeah. Hey, whatever.
Just to know, like, he surely got better handles than I do. Like, what can I add to my game? You know.
Teach me.
But as a Blues fan, I love to see the Remparts because Zach Bolduc played great for them. 6 points. I think he had a goal and assist in the final, where they just ran them to the Thunderbirds on the building at 5-0. So Bolduc might be with the team next year. That's really exciting. And
trade chip.
Yeah.
Juicy trade chip.
No, he's ours.
All right.
Up my Bolduc.
Yeah, I'm just... You want Crosby, hold your stick, and then you got your Bolduc. Okay, I got it. I was surprised. And we're gonna get into the hirings. I'm interested to see where Patrick Waugh ends up. Right? Yeah. Could be fascinating.
It'd be interesting to see if he has, much like I've given credit to Paul Maurice, and at times this year we gave credit to John Tortorella for growing with this new generation. Because I don't know how much you remember of Patrick Waugh's previous stint NHL coach.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was great for the clips. You know, the highlights.
Oh, yeah.
But not so much for the hockey. It'll be interesting to see if I don't know. I haven't followed him or watched for that at all. But we'll see if he's changed his tune or developed at all.
He was definitely in the running for the Columbus job. There was a bunch of smoke around it. He was in the running for, I think it was another one Kevin Weeks tweeted about as well, where I can't remember if it was just vague Patrick Waugh is getting a lot of heat and there's smoke around his name. But I also think Colorado at that time was not in a great space, if that makes any sense.
Maybe you may be correct.
I'm just going to go out on a little bit of a guess there, but I would say a little bit of a hunch. But it's going to be fascinating to see where he goes because he's dominated that league and he is a hell of a coach. Like him or not, he is a really good coach. Did he quit on Colorado? Yeah, he quit on Colorado. But I guess people need second chances.
Yeah, sure. Third, fourth, fifth, whatever. Just keep giving it to him. He's got a hockey name. Your guy, Andrew
My
Bernier.
guy.
Burnett is in Nashville. New head coach, Nashville Predators. Much maligned by me for being in and over his head in Florida, but I think this is a great situation for him because he has that learning experience. He did have success, and he's obviously probably pulled a lot from it. And he got to that point in his career where he had to take over Florida, earning it, work, putting in the work. I think this is a great place for him because he's going to be working for Trotz. Barry Trotz and above him there, and so I'm sure Trotz is going to have some good, wisdom around there now and then if he's receptive to it. And they've got a really great culture, seemingly, at least in the way that they do things there in Nashville. So I think that's really the greatest situation for him to kind of take his next step as a head coach in his head coach career. So I'm not suggesting that they're going to make a run for the cup next year, but I think that's going to be good for him, and I think that's a really exciting signing there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's been a perfect fit. I was very disappointed when I first read it. I had to do a double look because I'm like, I'm pretty sure they have a coach right now. But Barry Trotz did his old boy Mr. Hines there dirty, and he probably knew, but went out looking, found who he wanted, fired Hines, and brought in the guy that scored the first ever goal for the Nashville Predators, and Andrew Burnett. It's going to be
Brilliant.
interesting to see because Nashville's been very defensive oriented, right? Like from the back up, right? Andrew Burnett, the Devils had a really good power play this year. They scored a lot of goals. He was on that bench. It's going to be interesting to see the philosophy change a little bit. Even listening to Barry Trotz talk about the draft. Saying, I'll get you a third or fourth liner. I want to take chances on getting that superstar, that speed guy, that guy that's got that talent. We're not going to waste our picks on these plugs, basically. No disrespect to third or fourth liners. They are a hell of a hockey player and a lot better than I am, but it's a lot harder to find a player like Johnny Gaudreau, who was drafted late, or Nikita Kucherov, who was drafted a little bit later. Players like that, then say a Milan Lucic right nowadays game. So it feels like the philosophy is changing a little bit in Nashville, and I'm here for it. I think that's exciting. They have really good players. They have the short king Juuse Saros there. I love that guy. They have the supermodel defenseman in Roman Josi. They got Philip Forsberg still. I think it's a great hire. Am I upset? Yes, I really wanted him in Calgary. But whatever. I guess I'll get over it. It's a good hire. I love it.
I don't even know where to start. This next hire, you mentioned Columbus,
Yeah. Dumpster.
just dumpster fire. So, the word on the street, and by the street I mean Elliot Friedman's tender lips, is that Babcock, Mike Babcock,
The
disgraced
Babs.
and coach will be returning to coaching as soon as his contract with Toronto, I know that sounds like a typo, but as soon as his contract with Toronto ends at this end of this month, he'll be signing with Columbus. They're holding the job for him. He's apparently agreed to take on that role. So they're just waiting for him to be technically available. I've got my laundry list, but I want to kick it to you first. Talk to me, buddy. How are we feeling? What do you
I don't even
think?
want I don't want to talk about like I'll get your explanation. I can't believe it, to be honest, especially what came out of Toronto at the end of the like this all. I've heard Mike Commodore stories about Mike Babcock and what other players have told him about Mike Babcock. What I will say to Columbus is I just lived Daryl Sutter for 3 years. Is he a good coach? He's very good as his X and O's. Very good. But damage was done, if we can say that. These coaches have shelf lives, right? It's not the NHL of 20 years ago. It's not. I'm not in that room. I don't know if there's been changes in Mike Babcock's coaching philosophy, his style, anything like that. I think it's a bold hire. I don't really understand it, right? I guess they were like, well, we had a guy coaching last year that nobody even knew the name of. So, you know what? Let's try something different. Johnny Gaudreau played really well under Daryl Sutter. He played quite well under Daryl Sutter. Career years across the board. He has publicly said he's loved playing for Daryl Sutter. I'm sure he had say in this. I think Elliot reported that Rick Nash, who was also coached under Daryl Sutter for Team Canada, put his neck out for Mike Babcock. I don't know. It just seems weird to me. It just seems, I'm just not here for it. Like it is whatever. It's Columbus. I don't give a shit, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that really that's a big piece of it at the end of the day is it's Columbus and who cares? Because that's already a terrible franchise that really fumbled last year. And doesn't seem to Jarmo Kekäläinen, general manager of the Blue Jackets, for years has been relatively well thought of, well spoken of, and considered to be a bit of an astute hockey mind.
Yeah, overrated.
The last year or so has probably been one of the worst efforts that he's put forward with the team that he put together for the ice last year, which was just very unsuccessful, but not unsuccessful enough to really benefit from it somehow. This was just weird. So just in that sense, I don't understand bringing in a coach like Mike Babcock, even just on the face of things, if you believe in him, because I just don't see how it makes sense with what they're doing, because they don't seem to know what they're doing. They don't have an identity. I feel like they kind of took a big chance last year and it really hasn't paid off, and they're trying to help make sure it makes sense this year. But again, I don't think it makes sense. I'll tell you this. When I read about Babcock being the candidate and I double checked it to make sure it wasn't just rumors, and then it was like, it's as much as it can be confirmed without the contract being signed and press conference being had. I kind of took a moment and I was like, I don't remember why I don't like Mike Babcock. Like, I couldn't quite remember. Like, I don't like him. And I remember that it was, you know, a bit of a falling out and falling from fame. So I had to look it up. And so let me save you all the trouble. Both the famous incident that came out that really was the beginning of the end of his career there was when he had Mitch Marner, as a rookie, list the efforts level, everybody on the team, and rank them. And whether you believe the rumored events or you believe the events that Mike Babcock said on the record in an interview with Pierre LeBrun, Mike Babcock shared the results with members of the team. And then said, he went to Mitch Marner and said, hey man, sorry, I kind of fucked you over. A 19-year-old rookie, he'd get him to do that exercise, and then he screwed him over with the rest of the team. That is such if you want to have that conversation, if that conversation relates, you don't get a copy of it, and you certainly don't repeat it. If you feel like there's some benefit to that conversation with that rookie, it's not something you document. You just have a conversation with them and try to get your point home. You don't save his report so you can then leave it on your desk, Mike Babcock's words, leave it on your desk as you bring other players in for interviews, and then reference it and point it out to them. Again, Mike Babcock's own words that he was using to defend the situation. So he completely submarined a rookie to his veteran teammates, which what kind of brought a lot of the heat on when that came out. And it didn't come out at the time. It came out a couple years later. He scratched Mike Modano. Mike Modano was about to play in his 1,500th game. There was nothing to win, nothing to play for. It was a meaningless game at the end of the season. He scratched him to put him at 1,499 just to boost his own ego. There was no reason. He'd been playing on and off the whole season. No reason to scratch him other than to flex on him, to show him you can do with that. Ridiculous. He scratched Jason Spezza for a home opener in Toronto. Again, seemingly for no reason. Like, why would you go out of your way to deny that player that moment? Insane. It gets worse. Chris Chelios, Hall of Fame defenseman Chris Chelios, came out and told everybody that he watched Mike Babcock, and this is his words, verbally assault Johan Franzen on the bench in front of everybody whilst Johan was dealing with PTSD, post-concussion syndrome, anxiety, and depression. Johan Franzen has since, and since that happened and later on, it been interviewed and talked about how he had a really an awful effect on his mental health, how he considered Mike Babcock a bully and a jerk. Mike Babcock's defense to that was that he couldn't imagine everybody considering him a bully, and he doesn't even know what mental health is. That was his response at the time. How do you say, I'm not a bully, but by the way, what is this mental health thing? How can you disqualify yourself from something that you don't understand? Doesn't have the ability to reflect on his behavior. What I'm trying to explain is that Mike Babcock has a severe lack of character at best. And I'm going to tie it up with this final point. August 22nd of last year, Mike Babcock was interviewed and he said, I'm retiring from coaching. The plan was always to retire at 60. I'm 59 now. I've done it enough. I'm retiring. I don't have any more interest in it. Not even a full calendar year ago, he said he was fully retiring from hockey. Mm-hmm. And now he's coming out of retirement to coach this dumpster fire team. That's not somebody who shows any action. How do you have a leader who has such obvious bad character and just general bad vibes? How do you bring that person in for something like this?
I remember they cleared house of Torts because the culture was just awful, right? And then they put in Larson. Yeah. Oh, we're not winning games. You know, let's go find another real piece of work guy for our really young team. You know what? What did Babs do with Mitchie boy up in, you know, the big TO? Yeah, let's do that. Let's bring that guy in. Let's hire him right now. I think I wrote it in our chat. I think it was like a month ago, because I just saw Mike Babcock is getting like, his name's coming up. And I think I just tweeted, I mean, not tweeted, wrote in our chat, Babcock to Columbus. And everybody blew me off. They're like, no way. Again, I didn't actually think it was going to be real, right? Like, I thought Quenneville would get a job before Mike Babcock would get a job, to be honest, because there's been so much smoke with Quenneville.
Yeah.
Not because I think Quenneville's a better guy. There's just been a bunch of smoke. So, yeah, I was a bit shocked. I was a bit shocked when it officially happened. But Yarmo has got to be one of the most overrated GMs. They have some really good prospects in Columbus. I'll give them that. I think the ownership is watching these other expansion teams like Seattle, like Vegas, do well. And Columbus has never gotten over that hump. Heck, they've never even really gotten close to that hump, right? So I know that their third-round pick has been reported to be in play for as a trade chip. We'll see what happens. It's a bold move to bring in Babcock now, especially with a team that's not even on the verge of making the playoffs. They just gave Gabranson 4x4. Mm-hmm. That's one bad move, and now he's bringing in Babcock. Boy,
yeah.
Yarmo, maybe take a break, bud.
It strikes me as the type of move that, because Columbus...
It's a panic move. It's 100% a panic move.
It's a panic move. I feel like it's the type of move that you do if your boss says, you've got 1 year to convince me that this team is not collapsing and in free mm-hmm. fall, that there's something here. And so, or your boss says, I'm tired of these no-name coaches, tired of everybody talking about how great new Seattle is and Vegas is. I want our name out there. I'm tired of us looking pathetic. We've been in the league longer. And that's just it. Like, you can say what you want about the manner in which Vegas came into the league. You certainly can't say that Seattle did the same, but they're already competing and having and playing exciting hockey. It's Columbus has been in the league long enough that this isn't about having that right great start, because they've been bad long enough too that if they had the right people in place and if they had the hockey culture, they could have had something. Something that get the fans excited, something to put them on the map. But they don't. They have it. So that's what it is. So yeah, and it's a hockey culture thing, and it's at that high level as well, is that just giving these endless chances to some of these guys that just clearly don't earn it. You know, they Babcock hasn't done anything to earn this opportunity back. In the same way that, as far as I can tell, Quinville hasn't done anything to earn his opportunity back. It's just about letting the smoke die down, and then somebody's going to hire their buddy Joel back in there. And people are going to be upset, but they're going to brush it over.
What's worse is Stan Bowman, the man that was, he was the guy in charge during the whole Kyle Beach incident. He was a finalist for the Flames job. Like, I don't like Joel Quenneville, but I think if we're going to blame anybody, I'm going to blame...
There's a hierarchy of guilt.
Yeah, I think Stan Bowman is higher on my list of piece of work. And then just right below him is Joel Quenneville. Like, both of them even being in the runnings for any type of job is mind-boggling to me. So, I don't know. I it's the NHL, baby. Yeah. You know what? You see it in every sport. These guys... They keep getting gigs.
Just keep getting recycled. Last little thing we'll talk about here, because we wouldn't be a hockey podcast if we didn't take a moment to at least tie some manner of conversation to Toronto. It is the epicenter of the universe. So Kyle Dubas.
Oh my gosh. Can I take 1 minute to talk about Kyle Dubas?
Please do.
I just want 1 minute. That's all. This guy thought he had all the cards. He thought he had a full hand. He used his family as a negotiation tactic. I think Kyle Dubas is a genius. I would not want to get rid of Kyle Dubas, right? If I was the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I understand now more since the Brandon Shanahan, hey, we just fired this guy. I understand more why this guy got fired the way he got fired. And I don't know where you stand on this. But the whole, hey, I'm not doing this because I want another job. This has been hard on my family. I get it's been hard on your family. I think it's hard on everybody's family in that market. In any NHL market, it's hard on that family. Except for Columbus. But, and then to go get a deal from Pittsburgh? A president deal? 7 years? This man knew what he was doing. This man 100% had that deal in his back pocket. He knew exactly what he was doing. I'm not saying Brandon Shanahan should still have a job. He should also be fired. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you got to have some change. And I do love that Kyle Dubas tried to take Brandon Shanahan's job. He's like, hey, I know what I got in Pittsburgh. I'm going to take this guy's job and then hopefully stay in Toronto. Didn't work. Right? It just didn't work.
Yeah.
But I didn't love, and this is just my own, I didn't love that he did use his family as a negotiation tactic to the media for everybody to hear. And he really harped on that and then goes and gets an even bigger job in Pittsburgh. I just don't love it. And that's my take. That's my take.
I tell you, I got no qualms with Kyle Dubas. At all.
See, not that's why it's great.
One. This is a dude that's done a pretty solid job with that team. I know that people have, hey, listen, should they
to get a 7 year job in Pittsburgh? You think he's been that great to get a like? I think he's been a solid GM.
Hey, listen, good at
drafting.
Listen.
His trading sucks.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we think.
I know.
In Pittsburgh seem to think he did a good job. So
I know.
I mean, if another company called you tomorrow and said, we think you deserve a seven-year contract, would you say, oh, I'm not that good? No. No, you'd take the money and run.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, the fact that he was a lame duck GM this year and that his contract was up and they weren't negotiating, they weren't talking about it. I'm not going to say I think Shanahan should be fired, but I do think that somebody needs to convince me or at least stand up for what he has done that deserves any kind of praise, right? Like, if you look at this team, you can definitely see kind of, you know, the blueprints and the fingerprints of Dubas involved. What has Shanahan done? What has Shanahan brought to the table? He let his GM go into the year with no contract past the end of playoffs. And then so they talk about it after playoffs. So yeah, okay, it's open season now. I'm about to be a free agent, so I'm going to negotiate. I don't even question whether or not I don't even think his press conference was like, I'm sure it could have been used in a negotiating tactic, but I think it was pretty authentic. I think he was up there being like, look, I don't want to go anywhere else. I want to be here. And then the next day he wakes up and they said, well, we don't want you. Get the hell out of here. And so it's like, okay, well, if you're going to kick me out and someone's going to call me up and offer me a sweetheart deal, and I'm going to go to a place where my family can walk down the street and I'm not going to be berated by people everywhere I go, then that's not a bad move.
You're talking like Pittsburgh's a small market.
Compared to Toronto.
Okay, anything compared to Toronto is like, yeah, that's right. No, here's the thing. Calgary, lame duck GM, Brad Treliving. We'll get into his hiring in a second. It's not uncommon to have a lame duck hiring. Kyle Dubas has been linked to Pittsburgh since like December, right? So he goes, hey, I know I got this deal in my back pocket. They asked him not to do the press conference. Brad Treliving, Daryl Sutter, both did not do a press conference after this season, right? They're like, let's figure out the contract stuff, and then we'll go. Brandon Shanahan said the exact same thing to Kyle Dubas. Kyle Dubas decided to go out there, use his family as a tactic to get Brandon Shanahan's gig. 100%. Cut him out. He gets that sweet gig, can promote probably Pridham or whoever he wants. He gets all the final say. He can expedite it without going through more. I get it. But he was not innocent in this. He knew what he had in Pittsburgh. He tried to get that in Toronto. It got sniffed out. I get it. Toronto's been paying Mike Babcock for years to not coach that team. I get playing this contract out. And to be honest, Kyle Dubas before this season did not have any, he did not deserve a contract extension. They had won nothing. They had won nothing. Nothing. They hadn't even won a first round series.
Trust the process,
traded,
bro.
He traded a first round pick for Nick Foligno and more. He is still no goalie. He's got no defense. He's got the core four, which part of it he inherited, right? Like, I'm just saying.
Who's better? No. Dubas or Kekalainen?
Oh, I'll take Dubas. I'm not saying. I'm just saying how he went about it. I don't know. I definitely think he had the Pittsburgh thing locked up. He 100% had the Pittsburgh thing locked up. Try to get more out of Toronto. And they were like, hey, we think this deal is pretty fair for what we've gotten out of, like, what was it, 9 years of you so far? We love having you here. We want to keep you here. They thought they had a deal. And then he came back a couple days later and was like, I want more money. And then Brandon Shanahan fired him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He didn't even have that thing. That's where, like, you can't tell me. You can't sit there and tell me that he was working all this different stuff.
Oh, 100% working out.
When, even though his contract was done in like a matter of days,
yeah,
they fired him. Like that's an emotional move. Like that's not a professional. Like, come on. I don't know.
If Brandon Shanahan and his agent have a deal done, they both said, sorry, we haven't heard from Kyle Dubas, but Shanahan went into the weirdest press conference I've ever watched and said, we had a deal done, waited to hear back from Kyle, did not hear back from Kyle. The next time I heard back from Kyle is he asked for more money. He 100% knew what he had from Pittsburgh. I think it's more murky than what we've gotten, like the information we've gotten. It's a weird because there's like, I don't know, it's Toronto and there's like, are you this side or are you this side? And I don't know. They stole my boy Brad. I just hate the whole thing.
Even if I fully buy into the whole story you're selling here, I still think that the end result is that Shanny should be shown the door, not Dubas.
But I already let's said move on that quick.
We got to wrap this up. In the least exciting news for anybody out there, Brad Treliving has a job again. Now he's taking over the new Dubas, new Dewey in town. So I guess we can just go ahead and assume that the core is going to be blown up this year.
Oh, 100%. Safe? Yeah. 100%. One of them, Nylander, gone. Don't know why. I don't understand the Nylander hate. The guy makes under $7 million. He's unreal. Send him somewhere. This guy deserves better than what he gets in Toronto. I am now like on that team where I'm team Nylander. And I think it'd be dumb if Brad moves him. I think you're about to see a lot of, hey, Brad was working the phones. He's going to overpay for a lot of UFAs. He's going to play goalie roulette. He's going to go through 1,000 coaches. He's very good at trading when he does trade. The Matthew Tkachuk situation to this day, he gave the Flames 5 teams, trade me, and that was the best offer they got. So I don't know. I think Brad Treliving's another overrated GM. He really won nothing in Calgary. He's left the team worse than he received it. But hey, enjoy Toronto. Enjoy.
Yeah. I don't want to be a revisionist history kind of guy here. Well. He did get a lot for a trade that was basically forced upon him with very limited ability. But in retrospect, there were probably deals out there that had almost as a good upside with less of a cement blockchain to your foot kind of thing, where you've two guys over 30 making $1 jillion for the rest of time. But what's going to be great is when he trades Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and a first round pick for Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau.
Give it to me. Shoot it. Just shoot in my blood. Just it's my drug. It's going to be fascinating because I think Brad Treliving in Toronto is exciting for
everybody else.
For headlines. Like it really is. Like he was in the Jack Eichel sweepstakes. He was in the Mark Stone sweepstakes. He's been in every big name sweepstakes ever. And it's because he works the phones. Even Craig Conroy said he knows the pulse of everything in the NHL. He knows where everything's where like the prices for players. He knows what's going on. Does he always pull the trigger? No, he has drafted. Well, he did draft Adam Fox, Matthew Tkachuk. I can go Rasmus Anderson. Like maybe they just don't want to stay.
Maybe he should add an additional question to his draft process of, do you want to play here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's 100%.
Sums it up. You look like a great talent. One more thing. Do you want to play for me? No. Oh, great. Thank you.
We're still going to draft you. Yeah. I saw a hilarious headline where it was like, Brad Treliving will no longer have to struggle with players wanting to stay in Toronto, like he had in Calgary. And I go, what? Free agents aren't flocking to Toronto. The biggest one they got was John Tavares, and the fans want to like kick him off the team, right? Like they still don't have a goaltender or defenseman. This team's been built through the draft and trading. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Quick one hitter before we go.
Sure.
Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or neutral about your new general manager?
Boy, he talks a lot. He talks a lot. I'm pretty neutral. I'm happy they didn't do a recycled GM. You know what I mean? And I also don't want a recycled coach. I would like somebody new, a new voice. like when I heard, when I read the headline that Gallant was too expensive for the Flames, I was like, thank God, thank God. I'm like, I'm okay with him, with not having him. Let's say optimistic. I'll push it to optimistic. He wants to build through the draft. He's pushed it a lot. I'm excited. We'll see. It's always good to have a new voice.
Yeah.
This one just doesn't stop talking. Like me.
Yeah. Well, he was a fantastic hockey player. I loved always seeing him, especially on the big Flames run.
Yes.
Early 2000s, I think it was. That was fantastic. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I don't want to be a pessimist, but I definitely feel like my first instinct when I think of him isn't
GM.
Yeah. But I'm not out there. He's probably put in the work. He seems like a great guy. So best of luck.
I'll end on this. He feels like the Kevin Adams hire in Buffalo. Like, that's what he feels like.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if that's good or bad. So take it how you want to take it.
That's all for this week, gang. Thank you so much for listening to us. We do appreciate you bringing us into your life. So for my man, Twigs, for myself, Mitz, we love you. Take care of yourself. Take care of one another. And we'll see you next time.